Hello and welcome to this first edition of Exploring Enterprise, the new podcast series from the Enterprise Research Centre. I'm Lee Hopley and I'm joined by Professor Stephen Roper, Director of the ERC, and Professor Mark Hart and Dr. Vicky Belt, both Deputy Directors at the ERC. The focus of the Centre's work and this podcast series is research into small and medium-sized enterprises, and we're kicking off with how businesses have fared over the past year during the COVID-19 pandemic. So, Steve, can we start with you just to tell us a little bit about the ERC and the work that you do?
Surely. So the Enterprise Research Centre was set up in 2013 following the great financial crisis, really, and an uncertainty at that time about the need to support businesses as they recovered and grew after the great financial crisis. We're an ESRC-funded research centre funded by the Economic and Social Research Council. We also get a kind of significant amount of money from BEIS, from Innovate UK, from the British Business Bank, and from the Intellectual Property Office, all to support a programme of research around small business innovation, small business growth, and productivity. ERC is led by Aston and Warwick Business Schools, and we have contributions from other research partners across the UK university sector. The aim of the centre has always been the same, really, to build the evidence base for effective policy making for small and medium-sized firms in the UK. And partly that's around national policy, but it's also around local policy in organisations like local enterprise partnerships, growth hubs, and the combined authorities. I guess if I was thinking about the key themes of our research, certainly been about growth and productivity. We've done quite a lot of work over the years on innovation in SMEs, and we've done quite a lot of work on the drivers of growth around management and leadership, around finance and investment, and increasingly we're moving towards doing lots of work on net zero and the digital transition, so these dual transitions.
So the centre was born out of a crisis, and here we find ourselves in another one over the last 12 months. Vicky, I know the centre has been really crucial in helping policymakers understand developments across the SME sector, particularly over the last 12 months. Can you tell us a bit about some of that engagement and how you make that work?
Yeah, although we're an academic research centre, so we're based at Warwick Business School and Aston Business School, we want our work to be really relevant to policy and obviously relevant outside the academic community too, and to influence and impact policy. So to ensure this happens, we've got high quality engagement programme. We work directly with policymakers and practitioners, and we've always put a lot of emphasis on this since the centre was first established, and really that's why I'm here in many ways. My job role is about impact and engagement, and obviously we have a deputy director leading that work. So fundamental to this is ensuring our research outputs are accessible and freely accessible. We make all our publications available via the website. There's over 250 publications there that anyone can access. We have a wide variety of content to meet the needs of stakeholders. They range from research papers to accessible reports and shorter insight papers, policy briefings, SOTA reviews, infographics and blogs. We also run a programme of events at the centre, including an annual State of Small Business Britain conference. Over the years, we've had 6 conferences so far. They always have a really good reception. Provide really good opportunities for discussion and learning. We spent a lot of time building strong networks with stakeholders and what we call soft engagement. So that's like regular responsive contact with stakeholders. And over time, this has evolved into almost daily contact, really, with stakeholders on a range of issues. And it's taken time, but we've built really good, strong, open relationships built on trust and responsiveness.
And Mark, the ERC does a lot of co-created research. Can you tell us a bit about what that involves?
Well, just picking up on what Vicky just been talking through, I think it's fair to say that, you know, we don't just sit in splendid isolation. I mean, one of the things I think it's really important for us right from the outset was our engagement with small business owners and the small businesses themselves. In fact, that was one of the unique selling points of why our bid was accepted to create the Enterprise Research Centre, because of our connectivity to small businesses. So we involve them at all aspects of what we do, not just in disseminating, but involving in how we actually think about some of the problems. So talking to small business owners helps us begin to think about some of those research questions. And the research questions are there, but I guess, you know, having a small business perspective on them helps us design our research a lot more clearly. But I think in terms of the co-creation, it's really important to think about it in terms of, look, you know, we have great contacts with the British Business Bank. So, you know, they came to us last year, April time, pandemic kicking off. No one knew where we were going. What lessons can we learn from the great financial crisis? And, you know, Steve and I have been busy working with them, thinking through some of the issues. Also thinking about the Federation of Small Businesses. A lot of work that we did trying to understand, is the business support package that's being thrown out at the almost weekly budgets covering all of those individuals who are really finding, you know, no income. The government closed down the economy. So in that sense, you know, are the business support packages adequate? So, you know, we working with the FSB is a clear example of that, working with the British Chambers as well. So, you know, it's really important that, you know, we don't just sit as great scholars, others may have a view on that, we just don't sit apart and have these wonderful thoughts. We actually are out there, as Vicky has indicated, in the trenches, thinking through what are the pertinent questions. And obviously the last year we've been in high demand, but one of our problems has been, and hopefully, you know, we'll go on to this, is that we were set up to work with secondary data. And that's an absolute nightmare in the midst of a pandemic. We need data in real time. So we really have rolled our sleeves up, and I know perhaps Steve's been in the forefront of that. So, but co-creation is really what we do. We listen, we work together, and you know we work with Scottish Government, co-creating a project there in high growth firms, also in productivity, working with the Department for the Economy in Northern Ireland. Thank God we haven't been asked to answer any questions about the Northern Ireland Protocol, but no doubt that will come. But no, yeah, co-creation is what we're all about, because, you know, we don't have all the questions and we don't have all the answers yet.
And it's not always easy, is it, this working in this way either? It's very time intensive, but we think it's worth it, obviously, for the results and the impact that we get on policy. But obviously we can get under pressure. There's sort of things come from all over the place sometimes with tight deadlines. It's difficult sometimes to keep up with the amount of change there's been in government and policymakers. There's been considerable staff churn over recent years. And obviously over the last year, that's been a particular challenge. But overall, this way of working has really worked for us, I think, and we see the benefits.
I think it's quite exciting as well, in the sense that we're working all the time with people whose problems we're trying to help them solve. And we're bringing the evidence base to policymakers to try to help them better understand the kind of problems that they're facing and how they can actually begin to address those problems. And in the case of some of the small businesses and some of the business organizations that we've worked with, trying to help them to support their members better. And I think that's been a really interesting part of this, and a very rewarding part of the sort of ERC journey over the years.
I think that's a fantastic introduction to the work of the centre and the breadth of activity and engagement. And I know there's a huge body of output that can be found on the website. Mark, you mentioned that last April, at just when the pandemic was taking root, that nobody knew where we were going. I know there's been a huge amount of research happening across the centre since then. And one particular project was the Business Future Survey of 1,000 small businesses, trying to understand their experiences during the pandemic. What have we learned?
Steve's the better person to talk about the survey, because that was his idea. But before that, let me just explain the context. Last April, what could we go back to? We had all the data of what happened during the great financial crisis, and we had some work on that. So that was our starting point, Lee, that, you know, what happened during the actual, you know, in the eye of the storm. So we saw the collapse of startup rates. We saw problems with existing companies, a lot of not as much labor shedding perhaps as some had imagined, but we used that as our basic reference point. And then we looked at the recovery period about who was driving the recovery. And there we got a clear story of some of the frontier high productivity firms took a little while to get back to where they were before the crisis. And some of the laggard firms were able to sort of, fill in some of the gaps where some of their competitors disappeared. So we were able to tell a story, but the problem was that was 10 years ago, and the world has changed in 10 years. We've got a whole Brexit tangled in with a pandemic. We didn't know what on earth was happening. So whilst we did all that work, I did a piece of work on the regional dimensions of that for the British Business Bank, but was that really helping them? It was an interesting piece of work, but I think what we did need was primary data. So I think that's where Steve came in with the Business Future Survey.
So the Business Future Survey was probably one of our biggest projects in ERC last year. It was a joint project, like many of the ones that we do, with the Lloyd Centre for Prosperity at Aston Business School, and also Queen's Belfast, who had a share in the project. We talked to about 1,000 companies across the 1,000 SMEs. And I guess originally, when we were thinking about the project very early in 2020, we were thinking about it as being around these dual transitions of net zero and digital and how those two things might come together. And then, of course, COVID arrived, unfortunately, and changed everybody's world a little bit. We know that the COVID pandemic has led to a sharp rise in digital technology, so it's accelerated that digital transition, and we saw very strong evidence of that in our survey, which was done towards the end of 2020. What else did we learn? Well, we learned that for many firms, particularly smaller firms, skills are a real barrier, or a lack of digital skills are a real barrier to using digital technologies, implementing them very effectively. We also learned that many small firms are very committed to the net zero agenda, and that was really good to see. Despite the COVID, the impacts of the COVID pandemic, many firms were beginning to take some steps to try to reduce their carbon emissions, and that was hugely positive, many small firms. But for many other firms, there was some considerable uncertainty as to how they moved towards that net zero objective. And so I think one of the key lessons that we learned from this Business Futures survey was that many firms are going to need quite a bit of support in actually making that net zero transition, whether that's external consultancy, whether it's business advisor support, whether it's case studies about actually how you do this, how do you become that net zero SME? All of those things are going to be very important as we kind of try to move towards net zero over the next few years.
I think, if I can just come in quickly, I mean, I think this was a survey which was really, really important. I have to really acknowledge the fact that the ONS got their Business Impact COVID survey up and running in April last year, and waves every fortnight. I think we're nearly up to wave 30 now. The context there was really, how much of the economy is going to disappear? How much of it will bounce back? So that was a really important real-time survey that we've been we'll be using to analyze that and try and understand, where were the better performing firms, what happened to them during the recession. But I think what the Business Futures Survey was able to do was the behavior, because the ONS survey wasn't saying anything about behavior. It was a huge survey, of course, but it was really headline, cash reserves, how long are they going to last? How much has turnover fallen, profitability? How many workers were furloughed? That was brilliant. But I think what we were able to do to bring to the party, so to speak, was, okay, what are you doing? Thinking about those 1,000 firms, the way in which they were looking at their business models, innovating around it. And many firms were innovating around their business model without actually reaching out to these big agendas about digitalization and net zero. But I think, I believe it was one of the few surveys in real time that really brought an understanding of what small business owners were actually doing.
And now we're starting to see expectations that, you know, we could be in for a stronger rebound than I think people were maybe expecting 3 or 6 months ago. I mean, does that give us some hope that those ambitions around digital and net zero will stay on track this year going into next year?
Well, sorry, if I can just come in. I know Steve, this is his patch, but the key thing for me was last year, we have to untangle the recovery from the pandemic in the context of the UK ending the transition period, and now we're in full Brexit, fifth month down the road. And it's very difficult to be able to say we're rebounding after the pandemic because of another huge, asymmetric shock to the economy, in particular small businesses in the mix. So I'm probably a little bit more unsure how strong that rebound will be because daily, weekly, you know, the effects of leaving the EU are really coming home to bear. So companies may well be able to prepare after the pandemic, but there's something else in their sector which could be affecting them. So untangling these effects, I think, is our next big thing, certainly in the context of the small business community. Sorry, Steve, I just wanted to come in there.
It's fine, Mark, of course. I think, Lee, the answer is probably we don't know. In essence, but there are certainly some positive signs. I mean, the labour market is behaving much more strongly than I had anticipated. And if you'd have asked me a couple of months ago, I would have said the situation would probably be worse than it actually is at the moment. Furlough scheme has yet to completely end, so we're not quite sure how that's all going to pan out, I suppose. But I think there are some positive signs. Variants of COVID permitting. If we can stick to the roadmap through to the summer, you know, I do hope that we will get some sort of speedy recovery. We're all wanting to get back to normality, and I think many businesses want to get back to that too. There isn't an upside to COVID, but the digital legacy of COVID will be substantial. That will be something that changes many businesses going forward and the way many of us work for many years, I think, to come. And that will have implications about future work patterns, future patterns of consumption, whether we're all in town centres quite as much and buying as many coffees from Costa as we used to, or whatever else that kind of thing, that kind of homeworking type thing brings. That's going to take a while to unwind, I think, until we see how much of that shift to remote working is permanent and how much of that is purely a temporary thing and we go back to the normality of what was the sort of pre-COVID era.
I mean, if I can balance that a little bit, we still lost 500,000 self-employed individuals last year. Fact. You know, it's not as if... you can argue about what the reasons for that were, but and I don't want to get involved in the politics of that, but that's just a simple context. We've lost 500,000 people who just had no income and have drifted into self-employment. What are they doing now? Question mark. We also know that some of the labour market effects have been mitigated by people returning to EU 27. So we've had tens of thousands of people who are looking for work. So we need to unpick all of that to see what the effects are going to be. So the unemployment is probably lower than was predicted, forecast a year ago, absolutely for sure. But there's a whole set of reasons for that, which is more than just to do with businesses being more resilient through the pandemic.
Today there are some really positive labour market statistics out from ONS, which shows employment is much more healthy than when we thought. So that's really encouraging, I think. As you say, it's interesting to know who's recruiting, obviously, and what type of jobs they are, because I don't know what is possible to find from those statistics. I've only had a quick look this morning, but obviously lots of places are reopening at the moment. So perhaps that's not surprising that, you know, there's been a bit of recruitment going on, but what type of jobs are they? Are they good quality jobs? As far as I understand, there's still a lot of youth unemployment. Young people are still suffering. So it's quite a mixed picture, I would say.
A lot of young people have just postponed entering into the labour market. I mean, don't forget, we've got, you know, 16-year-olds, 18-year-olds, 21-year-olds entering a labour market last summer, and we thought that the world was going to collapse because there's nothing for them to do, and that doesn't seem to have been the case. But, you know, again, we need to be thinking, we're sitting now in, you know, the third week of May, so we need to be thinking very carefully about, you know, what's going to happen over the remainder of the year.
Turning to what I know is a big area of focus for the centre and has been since its inception, very much linked to the government priority of increasing R&D and innovation across the economy. I mean, clearly looking at the prospects for that, there are some drivers from net zero, the digitisation agenda, but also the huge cloud of uncertainty and the pressure on resources that will inevitably have come from the consequences of the pandemic. I know that ERC has been looking at how firms have responded through their innovation activity during the pandemic. What are some of the key findings there, Steve?
Lee, we've been working very closely with Innovate UK over this period and the Innovation Caucus to look at the way in which Innovate UK grant holders, that's firms which have had innovation support from the government, have actually been thinking about their R&D and innovation investments going forward. And like all firms, although these are very technology savvy, leading edge firms in many cases, they've been hit like everybody else by the COVID pandemic in many cases. So what we've seen in these firms is that there's been big practical issues around continuing doing R&D and innovation. Many of the labs, many of the testing centers were disrupted during lockdown. People haven't been able to go into the labs to do work. And so that's created some sort of temporary disruption and slowed down a lot of sort of R&D and innovation activity. Perhaps more long lasting than that is the financial implications, however, where firms have seen lots of pressure on their liquidity, and they've prioritized other investments which are more short term than the sort of long term investments of R&D and innovation. So they've been trying to stay alive rather than investing in the long term future through R&D and innovation. So that's been the story of the last year, really, that as we expected to see, in a way, the crisis has led to sharp reductions in many firms in spending on R&D and innovation. And those look as if they'll persist for a little while. Interestingly, however, when we ask firms about what they see as the sort of medium term future, perhaps 12 or 18 months out from here, they're a bit more optimistic. Over that period, they say, well, we're envisaging increasing our R&D and innovation spending. So maybe this is a positive signal. But of course, there's huge uncertainty out there at the moment. And so firms, like everybody else, are guessing a little bit about where they're going to be over that sort of time period.
And just adding to that, Steve, I mean, don't forget, you know, the loan repayments will be kicking in very, very soon over quarters three and four. Of 21, and you know, again, the outworking of that needs to be thought through as well. So there's a lot of issues here which we need to keep a very close eye on as a centre as we're beginning to look at our research. You know, the COVID support, and it has to be said, I think the bill is now up to just under, well, £372 billion has been spent on COVID. I think the vast majority of that, certainly well over half, has been spent on business support. You know, well in excess of £200 billion. But you know, it was loans, guaranteed or not, it's all got to come back to businesses to start the repayments. And you know, I'm talking to one or two businesses who you know have been cautious, knew it had to happen. You know, they had the liquidity to get through the crisis, and you know, they factored it in. But how many businesses out there hadn't got the sense to think it through in terms of proper cash flow forecasting? And that's basically a problem.
I think that's absolutely right, Mark. And the sort of repayment periods and the grace periods with these loans are going to be critical, I think. And we're going to see a lot of businesses, I think, that some of these things as time passes.
I mean, can't just look at 2020 in isolation. I mean, if I remember correctly, Steve, investment was falling anyway in 2019. It was down UK-wide, not just in small businesses. or innovation grant holders, but you know, there was a fall of well over 3% of investments. So we're coming into this pandemic not in a very good state. We are coming into it from a point of view of entrepreneurship and, you know, startup rates, which I think is people pay far too much attention to, actually. It's a point. You know, one of the things we're looking at the moment is the share of employment in young firms and how that is really important for the dynamic, not just the number of the headline numbers of startups. But we're in good shape. But as I said, you know, we've lost, you know, 500,000 self-employed plus. We've lost a lot of good businesses. And you know, it's you know, we were in, not in great shape in December, New Year's Eve, 2019. So, you know, looking at 1 year in isolation, that has to be taken in the context of, you know, we were, you know, we've had a decade of stuttering growth, for goodness sake, since GFC. So, you know, we were not coming into this with a really buoyant growing, you know, back in the day, 2-3% growth in GDP per year. We were not there at all, struggling over 1% most years.
I think the counterpart to that, Mark, is that what were firms doing with cash over that period prior to the COVID pandemic? And we know that as a result of the financial crisis, firms did become a bit more risk averse. And so they were sitting on a bit more cash going into COVID than they might have been, at least going into the great financial crisis of 2000. Yeah. So for some firms that had that rather conservative investment strategy, that will be, that those cash holdings will have been critical over the last year.
Absolutely.
But again, I absolutely take your point. That's not typical of all the population of companies in the UK, but it will have helped some. And I think that's probably, you know, another one of these factors that we'll need to sort of unpick as the months and years go on over the, you know.
But it feels like the support for business can't really end when the economy finally unlocks. There's an awful lot more support of a different form that small businesses will need to sort of ensure that they're prepared for the future, improving productivity, looking at new markets, that type of thing. Policy will need to pivot essentially to a different kind of support for business. Would that be fair?
Absolutely, Lee. I think, you know, from my perspective, I think one of the things that we can do is extend the furlough scheme a bit longer. That gives businesses flexibility. I think, you know, loans are not the future here, but I think the furlough scheme in France and Germany have just rolled it out to 2022. So there's certainty there for business to say, look, if you need it, as you bounce back, that's there. The other thing I think, and it goes back to what Steve were talking about earlier, and indeed Vicky, in terms of the wellbeing agenda, you know, we want something in return here for business support. It's not just about getting into export markets to seek out the opportunities as we've left the EU, but it's also about, you know, the net zero agenda. You know, walk with us and we'll support you. So engage more actively in the net zero agenda and digitalization. So there has to be some sort of conditionality here that, you know, you know government will support. But I would need to see if there's an appetite for government to continue to support financially, not through loans necessarily, and certainly not through grants, because that, you know, that's just a recipe for just leave that comment hanging. But I think there has to be some sort of, you know, in return for businesses, the private sector has to contribute to these bigger agendas.
I mean, one of the other, I guess, big stories from the pandemic is the impact that it's had on individuals' mental health and well-being. And I know this has also been a focus of ERC research over the last 18 months. So how have businesses been dealing with that, Vicky?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we know that the pandemic's had major implications for mental health, and that's been all over the news. And in some of that mental health in the workplace story too. And many SMEs are obviously still grappling with this and the implications in the long term. As well as having serious impacts on individual well-being, it obviously also affects business performance. We did a survey on mental health and productivity of nearly 2,000 firms in the Midlands just before the pandemic took hold in early 2020. And we found in that survey a clear association between mental health, sickness, absence, and lower productivity. So we know there's a clear link. But the picture with the impact of COVID is really complex, I think. There's a range of different experiences people have had due to their occupation that they're in, the sector, the personal circumstances, and it makes generalisation really difficult, I think. It's clearly been a stressful time for many business owners and also employees. So we've done some follow-up research on the impact of COVID-19 as well on mental health in the workplace. And we found in that work that the COVID's brought a number of new triggers for mental health issues. Obviously remote working, isolation, the furlough scheme, which has obviously affected some of those that are on furlough, but also a problem with so-called furlough envy amongst others that perhaps haven't been on furlough and feel maybe put on at work. And there's a whole complex web of problems, really, with some employees impacted more than others. There's obviously a whole set of issues for key workers as well, which are different again, who are very much people working on the front line. That's very different to somebody like me who's been working from home in a home office remotely. So there's a whole set of really complex issues, I think, that need to be unpicked. There's people in different groups that have been impacted differently. I think there's emerging evidence that young people, for example, have found this really difficult. And anybody who perhaps relied on work for more of a routine and that routine's been broken has found it difficult and with impacts on mental health. There's also those with school-aged children who had the pleasure of homeschooling whilst also trying to juggle work. All of these things have really pressurised people and had impacts on their mental health. We've actually found in recent analysis that the proportion of firms that are reporting mental health sickness amongst their staff has actually gone down during the pandemic, which is maybe not what you'd expect. So we're doing work at the moment to sort of unpick what that might be. But one issue that we have found in that research is that we found employees seem to be less likely to admit to mental health problems at this time to their employers. So that is an issue, obviously, which will have longer term effects potentially. There's fears around the stigma of that and job insecurity in admitting a mental health issue at this time. So there's a whole set of issues which we're doing ongoing research on. But there's a huge research agenda here, really, with obviously massive implications, both for well-being and for productivity.
I think one of the other interesting aspects of the most recent survey that we've done on mental health was the increase in the number of employers who've actually put in place specific policies or practices to try and support the mental health of their and well-being of their employees. Now, in many cases, that's related to home working or furlough kind of schemes. But I think that's one positive that we can take out of this, that employers may be taking a more proactive attitude to actually supporting employee well-being. And again, a bit like the digital legacy of COVID, that may actually be one of the minor positives to come out of this, if that awareness of employee well-being is sustained.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a really encouraging finding that we've had from our recent survey work in this area. But the levels were still quite low in terms of awareness of schemes and initiatives. So I think there needs to be a bit more research about what kind of initiatives have been introduced exactly and how effective they are, and whether there's still that use of sort of national government or national charity support such as Mind. It's unclear whether it's driven sort of internally to the business and whether they're following the best good practice approaches or not. So this is something, again, we can do some further research to look into.
I mean, this is such an important topic and one which I don't feel is often looked at through an SME lens. And you get the sense that this is going to be a legacy of the COVID pandemic. So, I mean, this just feels like such an important ongoing piece of research for the centre. I mean, I know one of the other things that the centre really focuses on is sort of drilling down into different constituencies of SMEs, so kind of understanding how different cohorts are performing and are sort of operating their businesses. I mean, if we can just look at a couple of those, starting with women's enterprise, and I guess there are some links to what you've just talked about, Vicky, in terms of you know, different ways of working, caring responsibilities, you know, which may have disproportionately affected women's enterprise over the last 12 months. And I know you've done some particular focus on that recently. What are some of the kind of key challenges and maybe opportunities that we've seen?
Yeah, we know that women have obviously been disproportionately affected in terms of their mental health and also their work by the pandemic. And there's a number of reasons for that. And female-led businesses have particularly suffered. It's partly due to the fact that the sectors that women are overrepresented in have been the ones that have been most hard hit, or some of the ones that have been most hard hit by the pandemic. So we know that they tend to trade in sectors that do more face-to-face work, for example, so carers and hospitality sector, tourism, beauticians and hairdressers, for example. So some of those people that have really been bore the brunt of the crisis. So their trade's only going to be coming back quite slowly at the moment, and they've had to make a lot of adjustments to their businesses. It's also that fact that you pointed out, Lee, that women are more likely to have the caring roles in the family. So they've been impacted more by those pressures of homeschooling, nursery closures, caring for older relatives, for example, which if you're running a business clearly is going to have a major impact on the amount of time and energy that you're able to put into it. I imagine, I haven't seen much research specifically on this, but I imagine a lot of women are feeling pretty burnt out at the moment by the experiences of the last year. If you think about it, the magnitude of what's happened over quite a short space of time for many people, it's got to have such a huge impact on them. We've worked quite closely with the Women's Enterprise Policy Group, who've recently been arguing that much more needs to be done to support women's enterprise to address the gaps in support for women. So there's already a huge entrepreneurship gap anyway in terms of gender in the UK. So only about a third of small firms are led by women. And the Women's Enterprise Policy Group have been campaigning really to develop more female orientated policy that supports women business owners and specific support for women running their own businesses, advice, financial help, also help with childcare, which is something which is very rarely discussed actually in business policy.
And Mark, some additional work focusing on ethnic minority-led businesses through the pandemic. Has there been any sort of notable trends there?
Yeah, I mean, I think we did a piece of work with the FSB published last summer on unlocking opportunity. Obviously, you're writing a report and you're looking backwards at the data, then all of a sudden the economy closes down and you sort of think, well, give a nod in that direction. But more seriously, when you think about hospitality, wholesale, retail, and you think across certain of our cities, Birmingham in particular, we're obviously, you know, we're a research centre based in the Midlands, so we're very acutely aware of the diverse range of communities around the second city. And I think that, you know, it's clear to me that there's been a disproportionate effect on ethnic minority communities in terms of the sectors in which they traditionally operate in. I don't want to stereotype that because it's a bit lazy in many ways, but it is true to say that there are effects there which will be longer lasting for certain communities. I think the other thing to balance that out is that we know from other research, this is one of the things that came through in the report, was, you know, ethnic minority communities, particularly immigrants, are more likely to be entrepreneurial, more likely to be creating wealth for themselves, their families, their communities, creating work for others, and also more likely to be innovative in what they're trying to do. So it's not just about those stereotypical, you know, restaurants, retail, wholesale. There's other aspects of the economy as well, other sectors of the economy in which they're engaged in, where they tend to have, because of the sort of the global connections and reach they've got, they perhaps do tend to be a little bit more creative in their thinking. So that was one of the big things that came out of that. So I think they're a very important, they're a vital component of the UK economy, a critical component to certain city regions. And we need to be very, very careful about how we seek to support those, because one of the things that we have found out in our research with the Centre for Research and Ethnic Minority Enterprise is that the accessing mainstream business support is difficult. So therefore, there's a lot of experimentation taking place by the research centre led by Wanda Ram on taking business support, working closely with NatWest and taking business support into the community, for example. Also working with community groups like Citizen UK and various housing associations, for example. So I think that's something we've learned and we need to be mindful of that going forward.
I mean, we've touched briefly on this already, which is about the breadth of government support that's been available to businesses over the past 12 months and how that's been aligned with successive lockdowns, for example, taking the pressure on cash flow, business having to make their premises COVID secure. You know, there's a huge amount of investment that many businesses have had to make just to be able to reopen their doors again. But perhaps we can focus in a little bit on your sense of how effective that package has been.
I think there's jury is still out very much on that, Lee. And, you know, it'll only be in the sort of medium to long term that we see how effective that support package has been as a whole. And as the conversation with Vicky and Mark has just suggested, that the effectiveness of that support package, lots of the finance, lots of these loans, lots of the local support that's been provided by local authorities and other agencies. We'll have to wait and see how that works out, and we'll have to wait and see how that works out across the UK business landscape, I think. We have been doing a little bit of work through our association with the ESRC-funded Productivity Institute, looking at some of the way in which furlough support and some of the loans has influenced the behaviours of firms in the very short term of the last 6 months. And what we've seen is that firms which have received government loans are more likely to have positive future investment intentions than those firms which didn't. So it does seem as if the loans that firms have been receiving are making them more likely to invest in the future. And that's got to be good in the sense for the future of those companies and the long-term productivity gains in those businesses. And furlough itself also seems to be positively associated with increases in well-being among the workforces. Firms using furlough were less likely to report experiences of mental health, as Vicky was saying earlier. And even when we standardize for a lot of different characteristics, that's still the case. That could be because employees are not surfacing mental health difficulties, or it could be that furlough is actually having some positive effect on employee well-being. Employees, for example, could have used the furlough opportunity to build their human capital while they're at home, to take on board new training opportunities. And then my daughter was in that situation. She was furloughed for a couple of months and she spent the time learning some new software for the job that she was going back to. So if that has been a general phenomenon, that might have been had a positive effect on well-being. But again, I think it's very early days to be making any sort of broad assumptions about these kinds of things. The other element of this is that if you support poorly performing firms with loans, then you stand the chance of perpetuating those firms in the marketplace when they actually are not generating very much wealth for either their owners or their employees. I mean, we've talked about zombie firms in the past, and that might be one outcome of this kind of loan capital. So there's some positive messages here, but also some downsides. And I think it'll only be in the medium term that we see which of those actually comes out more positively or more strongly in the wash.
Yeah, but those who engage with businesses, kind of understanding some of these trends is going to be really key to how they engage with and support small businesses in the next stage of this journey, I guess. You know, thinking about forbearance measures, for example, which is some of the thinking post-financial crisis, which perpetuated some of these zombie firms and impacted on productivity.
Yes, I think we're going to have to take a very much multi-level approach to this as policy, advisors, looking both at what's going on within the firm and trying to help those firms build the capability and resilience to bounce back, but also having very much that sort of ecosystem perspective where we're looking at the mix of firms that we've got in the economy and actually taking a very quite an active view about thinking about what that means for the future. And indeed, whether as government or as agencies or as universities, we need to be behaving in particular ways with particular groups of companies to better support their recovery and growth.
Well, just on that point, sorry for jumping in, Stephen Lee, but, you know, one of the big successes of our research centre, if you can ever judge us as having success, which we like to think we are very successful, is that since last summer, our research on leadership management, which Steve mentioned earlier, has actually been shaping Treasury thinking for the new programme that's being launched in March budget on Help to Grow Management. There's a sister program, Help to Grow Digital, which is still on the drawing board, which will be coming out in the autumn time. But I think that, you know, to be able to point to research which shows that this actually matters, that actually has impact on small business. So this is something which is going to be rolled out from June 21, be formally launched by the Chancellor, and it will be working with 30,000 businesses over the next 3 years. Run and delivered by, and this is the point Steve was making, our leading business schools. And, you know, at the moment there's over 30 business schools, there's more coming into the pot to deliver this. It's a UK-wide scheme. So, you know, it is going to give leadership and management skills to a range of businesses, all sectors, all communities, all locales, which I think is going to be important going forward. Not we've been here before in terms of growth programs, but I think what's important is it's actually tied into those people who know how to deliver in a peer learning environment leadership and management programs, rather than some large consultancy firm who really then have to recruit a range of people to deliver that. And I'm not mentioning names, but I guess people listening to this will know exactly what I mean. So I think this is an opportunity and demonstrates actually it's not just about the cash. It's about how you actually, and part of the program will be on financial management, feeding it into strategic decision making. So that's one of our big successes in the middle of a pandemic, that, you know, we were listened to, our research, you know, other people are doing research as well, but, you know, L&M, small businesses, we know within our four walls of our center that this makes a big difference. So I think that's something that's really, really going to be important.
Yeah, that's another fantastic example of the tangible impact that the centre has on policy and support for small businesses across the UK. I mean, it really does sound like you all have had your foot on the gas over the last 12 months. I mean, there's a kind of huge amount of evidence that you've really brought to the table over this kind of really challenging time for everyone. But clearly the work is not done. I mean, you've pointed to a number of areas where more research is needed and you know, where more thinking is needed to make sure that we're shaping the right policies for SMEs in the future. I mean, just a couple of highlights for what people should be looking out for over the next few months.
So the focus very much on over the next year or so will be on recovery, on supporting businesses through recovery, on supporting these dual transitions and trying to see how, as we recover, we can also become more sustainable and move towards lower carbon, and trying to put in place an evidence base which can support policy, which can support firms to actually move more rapidly in that direction. We've a couple of other sort of themes of work going on, I suppose. ERC is part of the National Innovation Centre for Rural Enterprise, partnering with University of Newcastle and University of Gloucester. So about one in four enterprises in the UK is located in rural areas, and we'll be working quite closely with our partners in that area to try to better develop the evidence base and the support and identify support, particular support needs of firms in rural areas as we move through the transitions and also into recovery. And the work with Productivity Institute will be very much around entrepreneurship on the one side, but also around innovation and exporting and productivity and how the UK's post-Brexit trade patterns work out in terms of influencing innovation and productivity in UK firms, hopefully on the positive side, but the evidence there will emerge over the next year or so, I suppose.
One of my big agenda items, obviously I've been working with others and some of the things that Steve's just mentioned, but one of the things is this empty slogan of levelling up. We need to put some flesh on that. And we had a little session a few weeks back where we were beginning to do that, because it's not just about infrastructure spend in towns across the country. I'll leave the politics out of it again. But I think we understand what we mean by levelling up. This country has been trying to level up in the post-war period. It has failed absolutely to do so. We've got some convergence from time to time, but basically, so we've got to go back to root and branch. What does it actually mean to be levelling up? I don't think the government knows, but I think we have a responsibility as a publicly funded research centre to actually help them understand what that means and some of the things it is about. A dynamic private sector, it is about innovation, it is about efficiency, it's about translating the productivity argument into what it actually means for firms rather than, you know, economists sitting to one side talking about productivity. And I think that's one of the nice things about our involvement in the Productivity Institute is that we're actually involving small businesses in our regional forums. And I think that's really quite exciting because we're getting a sense check on some of our research. So that levelling up agenda for me, Lee, is something which I you know, we publish a lot of stuff, the local growth dashboard, for example, to get some metrics into that discussion, but there's a huge job of work to be done. So like all these things, great strap line from government, and it comes down to the peer researchers to access sort out what actually do they mean and how on earth might they actually go about trying to achieve it.
I've no doubt you've got the answer, Mark, or you will have it. Last word, Vicky, on what's coming up.
Yeah, over the last few years, we've become quite well known for producing what we call state-of-the-art reviews or SOTA reviews, which are short, sort of to the point, readable evidence reviews on a range of key issues as they affect SMEs. We've got over 50 reviews in the series, so if you've not looked, go and have a look at our website and see what's there. But we've got some interesting things coming up to watch this space on for this. We've got a series of reviews on social enterprise, which will cover a range of issues, including the roles that they could play in the levelling up agenda, as Mark's already talked to, their role in diversity and social inclusion and environmental sustainability. Because these are organisations that have the mission to create social and environmental value through what they do. These could offer interesting solutions to some of the big problems, obviously, we face in response to the pandemic. So an interesting set of issues to explore there. And we've also got a couple of SOTA reviews coming up on SMEs and environmental innovation to see what we know about what's going on there in terms of promoting startups and small firms to develop green technologies, for example. So lots of really interesting things to see and to read in terms of what we're producing in the short SOTA review series.
Thanks very much. Well, that's it for the first episode of Exploring Enterprise. That's been a really fascinating run through of some of your recent research and a really good heads up on some of the important work that's to come. Many thanks, Steve, Mark and Vicky, for telling us about the research. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this first podcast from the ERC. If you want to find out more, you can find lots of this research on the ERC website, www.enterpriseresearch@ac.uk. Or if you like it in 280 characters, you can follow the ERC at ERC_UK. Thanks.